that's what this is about.
Okay, welcome to the...
That was intense.
Welcome to the podcast games. Whoever has the longest recording wins. Just keep talking. This. Don't stop talking. Just keep talking. All right, David, you good to go?
I hope so.
Nice.
If this crashes and burns.
Yeah.
But that's... I feel like that's okay. Like, remember the first time that I came on as a guest? Like, we had many technical difficulties, and then we just decided to redo it.
Oh, it was so bad.
That was so funny.
So, let's introduce ourselves, because we are starting kind of anew. I'm Serena. I have been here this whole time. If you forgot who I am, then did you even listen to this podcast? But I play the flute. I am one of the co-founders of Creative Baggage, and I'm staying one of the co-hosts for this season on. Justin?
Sick. I'm Justin. I've been here a long time, but not as long. You definitely win that. But audio engineer, saxophonist, guy who does things. It's not... that deep, but yeah.
And Davey.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Davey. I'm a junior at the College of New Jersey. I play saxophone, and my major is music education. And I'm an intern at Creative Baggage Podcast.
Yeah, so we have been working really hard this summer to build For the Lost Creative, which is our database of opportunities for creatives. And we wanted to kind of share our stories of why this is so important to us. Davey has been helping us research opportunities all summer. Justin and I went to Budapest to pitch this project, and we won a grant for it. So it's really been a long time coming, and we've worked really hard on it. And we just wanted to share our personal stories that hopefully would motivate you to go out there and look for opportunities and see where that leads you in your creative career. I think one of the biggest opportunities that I didn't know would lead somewhere crazy was... the summer after my sophomore year of college, I decided to apply for a mini study abroad. It was just 5 or 6 weeks in July, going into August, in Paris. And I applied with my roommate, who also dabbled in French in high school. And we were like, let's just go take this course on the French language. It was through our university, but it had nothing to do with music. My roommate was a business major, and we just wanted to go get some course credits, learn French, and see Paris. And I ended up getting a scholarship to go. My roommate decided not to go because she had other things to do that summer. And I showed up and I was like, you know, it's great to be here, but Paris is such an amazing place for music. So maybe I should reach out to a few flute teachers here, see if I can get some lessons. And what ended up happening was I met the teacher that I study with now, living in Paris. So I took a few lessons with her. We kept in touch. And when I graduated into the pandemic, we did online lessons. And I decided to come here for grad school to get my artist diploma. And even crazier than that is I'm here living in Paris playing flute. That kind of makes sense, that trajectory. But even like where this podcast is now, having gotten the opportunity to go to Budapest, all of that stuff, how much we've grown in the past few months, stemmed from me taking this original opportunity, because we were introduced to this program, Encore Telerondo, through one of my studio mates here in Paris. That opportunity was on our pilot database. I've taken other opportunities that we found. I won a Curious Creators grant a couple years ago, and it was just like $300. I won second place for like a writing project that I did. Whenever we look up opportunities, if anything is interesting, like I just do it and see where it takes me. So, yeah. I mean, who would have known that going to Paris to study French would lead to going to Budapest to win a grant for a database of opportunities with my podcast.
That's an incredible story, Serena. And to think going to a different country is just like, I can't imagine how scary that must have been to go to a different country to play flute. It really shows your dedication to your craft. And also just like, I don't know, that's just like an exciting opportunity, you know? I think I'm going to stop rambling.
But I mean, I think it's more of a mind, like my mindset was always just like say yes to everything when I was like in school and stuff like that. And like that just kind of naturally leads you to other things. And you can't really know where that's going to lead. And like very arbitrary things end up being like the inciting incident to like major parts of your life. But you can't really know that beforehand. Like I've definitely just done things in college because I was trying to do things. And now like that's why I have some like my closest friends or like that's why I have the current job that I have or a lot of things like that.
Yeah. No, also we can talk about like career milestones and that kind of stuff. But also the people that you meet, like Justin and I went to school together, but we didn't know each other. We met through the podcast because he was like, wow, the first season of your podcast sounds terrible. Like, can I edit it for you? And now he's one of my closest friends. Like it makes a difference. And also like when you go out of your way to take an opportunity that maybe isn't paid and you're just helping someone out, especially if it's your friend or someone that you really trust their vision. If you're just volunteering to help someone out, bringing your talents to a project that you believe in, like then you have a lot of people in turn who are willing to help you out. Like I can't name the number of people who were down to get on a Zoom call with me as we're figuring out how to build this database, how to get the word out there, how to get sponsors. So many people were like, yeah, I'm going to take an hour or two out of my day and just help you walk this through, maybe give you some advice, maybe look over your materials to make sure that everything is polished. And it's because along the way, like I've definitely volunteered to help a lot of people with their projects.
Yeah, no, for sure. But that's one of those things where it's just kind of like, at its best, like this is all just a community. Like everyone does kind of just help each other. I think the realization is that, you know, making it or success or whatever is actually kind of bad if it's just by yourself. Like that actually is kind of, like that's, if you just do that, it's kind of not it, you know? No, like actuality, like if you succeed in whatever way, but like you're just alone at the top, like that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
It's way sicker to come up with a, you know, a bunch of other people, you know, your close friends, like all the stuff, and you all help each other out getting, you know, to that point.
Yeah. No, the team element of it has been really fun. Even with the three of us, like we haven't even really met Davey in person yet, but just like going on these meetings and sorting through stuff together and hearing everyone's ideas, it's way more fulfilling than like me sitting on my computer trying to like get too deep into my head and then not knowing if any of the decisions that I'm making make sense anymore, which happens so much when you're working on a project all by yourself.
Yeah, I want to share this story. So every time I explain this story, everyone says like, what's the right word for it? Like a happy accident. Okay, so I when I first started music in general, it started by a complete mistake. It was my freshman year of high school, and I just got in my schedule for the school year. So I was looking down the schedule, you know, you have their basics, math, history, science. But then I saw, I said marching band and concert band. And it didn't make any sense to me because I never enrolled in those classes. So I immediately went down to the band teacher, Miguel Bolivar, who was a guest here on the podcast.
Oh, yeah,
and
we love him.
I was
him.
Like, hey, yeah, I got scheduled here by accident. Could you, what do I have to do to take it off? And he said, oh, yeah, you just need to go to guidance and they'll take it off for you. I was like, okay, cool. So I didn't go down to guidance, actually, but I went down. I told my friend about it. And she was in the band. So she was telling me, you know, you should give it a try anyways because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you'll like it. Maybe you won't. And then, you know, I was like, okay, I'll sit on it. I talked to my parents and they also agreed like, hey, maybe you should, you know, give it a try, you know? So I was like, okay, you know what? I'll do it. And if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right.
Nice.
So I was in the I was enrolled in the marching band because in my school, you can get credits for being in marching band. So everyone did like band camp and all that. And the only missing spot was a saxophone because someone dropped out. So the only reason I even played saxophone was because someone dropped out of the marching band. And wow. They needed an extra hole to fill. So I filled that hole. And then I was immediately very impressed by the level of skill in the band. You know, when I thought of band, I always thought of just like very not so great playing, you know, because like they're not professionals or anything yet. So when I went to the band and I saw and heard everyone play, especially as an ensemble, I was my jaw was like on the floor, you know, wow. Like I was like, wow, there's no way this group of people can be so good. So then from that day forward, for like the whole rest of the year, I practiced every single day to try to catch up to them. And by my freshman year, I finished. And I was still struggling to keep up with them, but I was much better and I definitely wasn't honking on the horn anymore. I could place a scale, you know. That was my first story.
Wow.
Yeah.
We should have a Miguel appreciation moment. Cause like yeah. I didn't have the same like accidental like falling into music like that, but I had the same kind of moment where I was like moving districts. Miguel was the middle school band director in my new district, and I didn't really like band. Like I was taking private lessons. But I didn't really like band. So I was like, maybe I'll just not take it when I move. Like, that's a good way to stop, I guess. And I could still do my music stuff outside of school. But I had a family friend who lived in that town. And she was like, oh, just do band. It's really fun. Like, Mr. B is really great. And then I took it. And it changed the trajectory of my life.
One of the things that I would have never expected being in a high school band is all the performance opportunities. Like being able to perform, I was being a high school student in band. It allowed me to perform in New York, you know, like MetLife Stadium, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Virginia. it unlocked all these other opportunities that I didn't even know existed, mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I think is great about exploring these opportunities because you never know. What you don't know, you know?
I always felt, even though I didn't start very late, I mean, I started at like 11. I was like, oh, I wish I had started sooner. I wish I had spent like all of my childhood playing the flute. Like think about how good I would be right now if I had done that. But there's really research out there that shows that people who really, really excel in a specific field end up, or like when you look back at their history, they spent a lot of time exploring. When they were young.
And I think that it's like, in general, it's just about being more well-rounded. Because I think the realization is that pretty much all creative fields are somewhat connected. Like all my musician friends, it's pretty common that they get a lot creatively from like cooking or things like that that then come into your music because you're thinking still creatively and like it's still an art form, but you're just thinking about it in different ways. And then when you apply that to music, it's like you come to conclusions that you wouldn't have normally come to.
It's a lifestyle, man. I'm really into finding creative ways to use my vacuum cleaner at the moment.
I'm hip.
I love that though. I'm going to relate vacuums to the database somehow.
I like this.
But when you have stuff out in front of you, at least for me, like it's much easier to come up with creative ways to do things than from scratch. Like if I'm sitting in an empty room with nothing and you're like, Serena, how are you going to build a microphone stand? Or like, Serena, how are you going to do this? Like, then the first thing my brain does is go, well, I should just go to the store and buy something that performs the function that I need. But when I have like things in my house that I'm looking around and playing with and tinkering with, then like there are so many more ideas that can come to my head, like, oh, this could also be used for that. And I feel like it's the same thing with opportunities. Like you go to music school and they're like, yeah, all you can do is practice a lot, try to build a teaching studio, do some like small local gigs and audition for orchestras, have fun. And then that kind of eliminates the part of your brain that's like, wait, what else can I do? Because there's nothing else in front of you. But if you're like looking at a bunch of opportunities in front of you, like even if nothing sticks out to you right away, like we've definitely had people search on the database that are like, you know what? We didn't find any opportunities out of the 50 or so that you guys have up so far. But the fact that like you gave me these ideas, then they know what else to search. And of course, we want to expand so that we're constantly adding new things that are interdisciplinary and like within a wider scope. But I think just scrolling through a bunch of things that you can do instead of sitting in an empty room not knowing what's possible, it makes a huge difference on what you see as a possibility in your career.
Yes, definitely yeah, agree with that.
Me like, too.
Because I think the problem with music school is that if you really only do what's laid out in front of you, it's really not that beneficial. It's always so crazy to me, like my whole story of how I got to what I'm doing now. Like I was no different than anyone else in that scenario. Like the one business music class that we had to take at Temple, I took it, whatever. That, you know, didn't think much of it. But like occasionally we'd have guest lectures, and like one time there's this organization in Grammy U. It's like through the Recording Academy. It's basically just trying to get college students and stuff in, you know, kind of that organization. And they put on events in the local chapter, you know, a few times a year. It's like a one-time fee for the entirety that you're in college plus 2 years afterwards. And I was one person out of like 30, 35 in that class. Literally, I can guarantee you zero other people did anything with that information. Mm. But I was just like, I was just in a mindset where I was like, I'm just trying to do things. Like, this seems like it might be cool. And then that led to meeting like one of the co-owners of the studio that I work at. And then I bugged him for a long time, and I ended up auditing his class at Temple and skipping other classes to go with that. And then there was another guest lecture in that class. And then I met my current boss, who like, and that's been like the past 2 years of my life, is just because I took a random opportunity that like I didn't really think that much of.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you brought up the other side of that, because there's opportunities that kind of fall on your lap that you'd almost be silly to say no to unless you had a really good reason. Like it would take away from something else that you're doing that is crucial. But there's also the like simple step of how many opportunities open up to you when you when you just send one email or when you just reach out to one person. Like I think there are so many people that we may have met through an opportunity or like a professor or somebody that we looked up to. This happened in the beginning of the podcast too. Like there were so many people that we wanted to interview that we felt like we weren't sure if they were going to say yes or if they were going to ignore our email. So we kind of took our time asking them to come on, but we eventually did. And we were surprised that like everybody said yes. And like when I see an ad on Instagram for something that looks interesting, or if I see like one of my friends post an interesting opportunity on Facebook, like I just send them a message. The worst that could happen is that they get back to you and they're like, oh, I don't, like it's not open anymore, or like they give you some more information and you realize that like that's not what you want. But in the best case scenario, like you could be opening yourself up to a much, much bigger opportunity. And also like, I think that's an underrated way of learning things. Like, yeah, we take classes to learn things in school, and that's kind of the only way that we're used to. But for example, right now we're working on this database and we're looking for sponsors to help us keep it going, to help fund the expansion of it so we can reach more people. The first thing I did was I saw Heidi K. Begay. She's a flutist. She runs a podcast on Facebook, who I was just friends with because she was a flutist. Like, I don't know when we added each other, but like we were in the same circles. But she posted that like she is running the Universal Music Business Summit, the Ultimate Music Business Summit. Sorry. And she needed an intern to help with corporate sponsorships. And I was like, I need to learn how to do this. So I'm just going to reach out to her and see if she would consider me for the position. And it ended up being a great fit. And like, I love working with them. And now I'm learning how to do what I need to do for myself through helping somebody else do it. Because now I have someone to guide me through the process. And like, there's no class in school for something like that. There's no class in school for a lot of things that we really need, a lot of skills that we need to do. And I think one of the best ways to do it is to either ask a mentor or like find a new mentor by helping somebody out, doing an internship or like just seeing if you can shadow someone, be their assistant for a little bit. It's kind of what Justin did too with your audio engineering stuff, right?
Yes, yes. But that's like kind of how it, and I think, you know, you can do these things whenever, but especially when you're in school and like when you're our age and you don't have a lot of other things going on and like you're kind of just a student, you can afford to just do things for the discovery of it, or like you're not necessarily like super concerned about money yet, or like that is the time to take some of those things. Because like that's what I did initially. It's like I started interning at what is now my current job, summer of 2020. And like, I really was not making any money from that. He bought me lunch every day, but I pretty much lost that money on the train rides to and from. So it kind of balanced out, you know? But like in the long term, it's just like that has been so fruitful in terms of just like skills and learning things. And like, that's been invaluable versus what I got out of like music school. Because there is such a disconnect from what you learn in school, which is still cool, and there's a use to that in some ways, but to like the actual business of doing it in the real world is just a very different thing. And like even people that I know, because like I went to school for performance and now I'm doing production audio engineering work. I know people who went to school for production and like, you know, it's just they didn't necessarily learn the things that are really being done out in the real world. And like the only way to learn is to actually be like on the ground doing it.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that you have to remember when you're doing something like that is your value. Like if you are doing something for free, you should know why you're doing it for free. And also like that in the future, what is the value of those skills, right? Like it's okay to not make your value in the moment. And of course, like it depends on your situation. Everybody's different. Sometimes you do need to be making money. But I think like one, knowing what you're getting out of it, money value-wise or other, is crucial, because then when you're done with that process, like you need to go out and negotiate how those skills are going to convert into you being able to make a career and make a living. But also, even if like you do need to be doing something that is making a certain amount, I think like there are opportunities out there for you to be doing something adjacent or learning a new skill through a paid gig. Like in high school, or not in high school, in college, like Bailey and I did a lot of work as program assistants for our teacher Mimi and her ensemble Dolce Suono, and like it was a really part-time position. Like we were getting paid a little amount, like for each concert that we went to and for the hours that we worked outside of it. But again, like okay, that money did help us get by. It paid for our food a lot of the times. And it paid for us also to have a good time as college students, to just have a little extra income. But we also learned like how much effort and what other skills you need that goes behind the scenes of putting together a concert, right? Like we looked up to our teacher. She was an incredible flutist and we wanted to play like her. But also we saw like, oh yeah, she spends a lot of her time writing grants. A lot of the times in meetings with her board or like coming up with themes for her next season or putting together program notes and the history behind her music and why it's meaningful and why people should listen to these composers. And all of that is necessary to put together a fulfilling concert. Like, sure, anybody would still want to listen to her play on her own, but like what makes her ensemble is everything that she does and the other people in her group does on top of that. So like those skills, I mean, scheduling stuff, writing emails to guests, we do also for the podcast, and it made me less afraid to do that. Same thing with like the internship that I'm doing now. Like, I feel a lot more comfortable reaching out to people and asking for help or asking if they would be willing to sponsor this project, because I had some practice doing it and it wasn't personal, right? Like, when you're doing your own project and when you're playing your own instrument, it feels so personal to be like putting yourself out there and saying like, help me with my goals, or like help my project grow, or listen to me play. But if you've done it a few times for other people, you realize that like it's just what everybody has to go through. And like you advocating for yourself is the best thing that you could be doing for your project.
Yeah,
for sure.
That reminds me of a story that actually has to do with this podcast. So when I was a freshman in college this time, I was speaking to my saxophone professor, shout out Kathy Mitchell, and I told her, like, I wrote down this plan. It was a 5-year plan, right? And in that plan was actually create my own podcast. In the plan, I'm not joking. I'm going through school year. Sometimes, you know, you realize some of the plans that you want to do, you decide you don't really want to do anymore. But then I was, you know, listening to this podcast. So I was walking to school, listening to the podcast. And then about an hour later, I get a text from Serena, because we worked in the same, we were interns together at the Mantra Percussion grant internship thing. So she messaged me, reaching out, saying, hey, do you want to schedule like a meeting? We would love to work with you after your experience, our experience with the Mantra Percussion grants internships. So obviously I was going to say yes. You know, that it was in my plans. Like, you know, either like create my own podcast or like be in a podcast. And that just goes to show you that sometimes there's opportunities out there that you wouldn't even expect that kind of just fall into your hands in the most unexpected ways. And somehow it all ends up working out the way you want it to.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. The like, we did work together on Mantra, and we were just in a few meeting rooms together, like never like one-on-one, just like in a group of like 4 or 5 people. We were just doing some like grant writing stuff, which plot twist also came in handy for me as a skill with this podcast. But I just remembered that like Davey always brought up ideas during the meeting. He was always communicative and he always like contributed to the conversation. And I also happened to be talking to Miguel at that point in time. I was like, oh, you know, like we might need some help with this podcast, especially with the database stuff. Like there's just a lot of work to be done. And he was like, why don't you ask Davey? And I was like, oh my gosh, I remember Davey. And he seemed to like be really creative and into it for the Mantra stuff. So like, yeah, why wouldn't I ask Davey? And like, all it took was kind of like 2 reminders. Like, one, my initial impression of you, and 2, like Miguel bringing up your name. And then it totally clicked. And I was like, he's the perfect person for this.
Yeah, when I was, I first agreed to the Mantra internship, I didn't know what I was doing at all. You know, but I think that's the beauty of it, is you don't know what you're doing until you're doing it. And then, you know, you start learning it as you go, and then suddenly you become like this expert in this. I wouldn't consider myself an expert, but I'm getting, never mind.
You are well on your way. Don't worry.
Expert.
You know, I wasn't expecting to ever use this information, and I didn't know how I was planning to apply it. But with the podcast and the database, and then, you know, now that I see all these resources and opportunities, I can use it myself, but I can also tell other music students as a future music teacher. And I think that's what's amazing about what we're doing here.
Aw, I love that.
So sick.
Yeah. I'm curious, when you said you wanted to start a podcast, like, what was your kind of vision of that?
So I wanted to start a podcast on music education because I noticed, I went to go search up a couple of music education podcasts, and there was nothing that was really fulfilling or that I found too engaging. And the only podcast that I really thought was pretty engaging was actually The Creative Baggage. And then it was another podcast. I forgot the name, but it was by that viola player on Instagram.
Oh, That Viola Kid. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny story, he was my orchestra mentor in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I remember listening to those two podcasts, and that's exactly how I wanted to center my podcast on. But, you know, here we are, and honestly, I couldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't want it any other way, I mean.
Okay. Just saying, though, you could still start your podcast. especially like once we've done this a few times, you'll learn the skills. Justin will teach you how to edit stuff and make it all clean. Like, it's not out of the question. I know plenty of people who are involved in a lot of podcasts. Obviously, it's a lot of work.
But I think the funny thing, though, is like when you're younger, or like, you know, every
how
many years. I know this is happening to you, but it's like when in the past, when you've like written down things that like you want to do, or that you're, you know, and you don't even necessarily think about those things for like the next like several years, it's crazy when you like reference those things, because even though you weren't like consciously thinking about oh yeah, I said I wanted to do these things like all these years ago, like you still, so many of those things you still kind of end up doing.
I feel like we are who we were when we were kids. Like, we didn't know it yet, but like we are kind of already the mold of who we're going to become.
Well, it's like things don't change like that much, you know? Like, I've definitely noticed that when like I was end of like high school, wherever, like I definitely had a Google Doc where I was like writing down like things that I was thinking, you know, because like music career, what was that going to look like? What was I trying to get into? Like, I looked at that recently and I was like, so many of these things is what I like am either still now trying to do, or like got into, or like am doing. And it was just crazy because it's like I hadn't thought about that list of things in like 4 or 5 years.
I feel like when I was a kid, I loved playing with like website stuff and like video stuff. And in my parents' mind, it was just all computer time. Like, Serena can have fun when she's not doing homework by playing on the computer. But like for them, like that's like, that was like my fun, non-productive time. But if I look back on the times that I spent doing that versus like what was traditionally considered useful, like, I don't know, reading books or like doing homework or studying, like the skills that I built from like clicking and dragging around a bunch of videos and websites allowed me to like literally build most of our website for Creative Baggage. And like, I have basic video editing skills now that like I use on and off. And of course, like, at some point, we can hire professionals that do all of that stuff for us. But in a project that is and was as small as this one, like, we couldn't afford to do that. I just had to figure it out on my own. And like, once you have the basic tools for something, again, you just tinker around with it and you use your creativity. And then you can kind of come up with ways to get around the knowledge that you don't have. But yeah, I don't know, Davey, have you noticed patterns from when you were a kid that kind of still stand?
Oh, God. I would say there's nothing specific that stands out, but I always just notice that everything always ends up working in your favor, whether you realize it or not, you know, like whether it's financially, in relationships, or career-wise, or any kind of way. things just always end up working in a way, in a mysterious way that you don't realize. And like the podcast, I wrote it down just like as a big list of things that I wanted to do within the next 5 years. And here I am, I would say 3 years later. And it's the opportunity just kind of fell into my lap whether or not I was actually ready for it or not. things work out in weird ways.
Yeah. I think part of that might be a mindset thing too. Like, I think you get stuck in loops. Like, our brain recognizes patterns and then we draw conclusions based on that. So like, if you have the mindset that everything that happens, you will learn something from it and take something away from it, then it starts to spiral into good things because you made an active effort to think about like, what are my takeaways from the situation, even if it seems pretty bad. But I think it's also easy to fall into the other side of it where like, if you only see the bad in any situation, then you're going to fall into a vicious cycle also of like, oh, well, what's the point anyways? And then you end up taking actions that might make you miss out on those opportunities. I do think a lot of it is psychological.
No, it's all mindset. It's like 1,000% all mindset. It's really, because I mean, the same, you know, not people generally on average, I mean, give or take, have like this similar amounts of like good things, like bad things that happen. It's not, but it's like, you can't really control that. But like your reaction and your takeaways from those things, you know, people like that seems what's more self-determining about that. It's not like the actual events, but it's like how people deal with those things.
Yeah. And your resilience and your recovery time too. Like, I feel like now when I'm teaching students, like I realize that when I was younger, like I always thought of my teachers as like really wanting to push me to like achieve goals. Like in my head, it was just like, oh yeah, my teacher's going to introduce me to like competitions to do, help me prepare for it, help me get into schools. And like, it's kind of an old school way of doing things, but also I think half of it was me being a kid and not seeing the bigger picture. But like now for me, when I'm teaching, like for every single student, the only thing I really care about is like, are they resilient? Like if you're going through a rough patch where you're really struggling with one thing, are you going to keep tackling it, or are we going to switch gears and like look at it from a different perspective? Like, I want to show them that if you get stuck or you're feeling down about something, that there's another way to approach it. There's another way to look at it. And it's funny because I think like adults are really good at seeing that for children. Like if a kid falls, if anything happens, they're like, oh, they're going to get over it. They're a kid. They're going to recover. And I've noticed more with adults that sometimes when something happens to us, we're like, oh no, I'm just going to choose to stop doing this. And also, I think you see the windiness of it more when you're an adult. Because like when you're younger, you just don't see those nuances. Like if there's a day where you sound a little bit worse, you might not even notice. I definitely didn't.
Yeah.
But like now it's like, if I made progress on something yesterday and it goes back, like I notice it and it's a little frustrating. And I have to remind myself that like, that's normal and it happens. But just the fact that I heard it is going to make me a little upset. Not going to lie.
But also it's like with time at a certain like skill ceiling, better gets really subject, like what is better. And so it's the whole another can of worms.